Welcome to a course on leadership. Now you'll notice the visual that I've chosen for this, and that's, you know, a person saying, "This way, this is where we're going," as others carry the arrow that's going there. That's in many ways a wonderful picture of leadership. It's what you are called to as a Christian leader, and it's certainly what we're called to here in Christian Leaders Institute to help you be more effective in being a leader that makes a change in the world. Now, if you have been part of Christian Leaders Institute training for quite a while, you may not have taken the first 10 sessions of this class. What happened was we were working on this class of 36 sessions when a decision was made to change that. Instead of 36 sessions, we moved the first 10 sections about you as a leader. We moved those sessions into the introductory course. So if you've been around a while, you may have missed those 10 sessions, and I want to encourage you to go back. But today, I'm just going to take you on a look back just so that you can see where we have been, and then we'll talk a little bit more about where we're going in this class on leadership. We looked at the leader in this previous class. Here's the model I've been using, and this is the model we're going to focus on for the future. We're going to look at a leader with all of his strengths and weaknesses, all of his pluses and minuses, that you as a leader have some unique individual things that make you effective or ineffective as a leader. And so we've been looking at that, and that's part of that first 10 sessions. In this class, we're going to focus on that second part, initially. What does it mean to be a person who's looking to change the culture? Now, the culture is defined as the way we do things here, and I'm focusing here on the star that's there, and the star is a mixture of a mission statement or written things like rules and procedures, but it's also, you know, how stories are told and who are the heroes. It's the physical layout will tell you a great deal about the culture, and the rituals that people use will tell you a great deal about the culture. And so we're going to examine culture, and as a leader, you're going to have to know the culture where you are before you can move on to the future. And so we're going to look at that, and then we're going to look at vision or a preferred future. And you'll notice the image that I've chosen for that is the star with that statement by Glenn Heemstra. The preferred future vision becomes the star that you steer by, not a simple map to be followed. So I'm going to use that idea of a star. You know, when they started navigating off the coasts early on back in the 18th century, off the coasts of Europe and the coasts of Africa and etc., it was scary because when they had no landmarks to steer by, people would get lost very quickly. And so somebody discovered that if you had a fixed position you could work with, you could use the sextant as the instrument they created, and you could focus on that star, and by that star you could tell where you were out in the ocean where there are no landmarks to steer by. And so you could correct your course based on the North Star and your relationship to it. Or you could move further north or south or east or west based on how are you situated in relation to that fixed point. Well, vision becomes that fixed point, and we're going to look at how you describe a vision, how you discover a vision, how you craft a vision, and then how do you communicate a vision in this course. And then there's that yellow box. That is the prayer and the planning that are necessary, and you provide the impetus as a leader for that prayer and that planning to happen so that the preferred future becomes a reality. So here it is in writing. A leader with all of his pluses and minuses, strengths and weaknesses, interacts with a group of people to define the culture, which is defined as the way things are done here, in order to develop a vision for a preferable future, and then that leader provides the impetus for doing the actions necessary to bring about that future with plans and prayer. So that's what we're doing. We've been focusing on that leader in the first 10 sessions. Now, in this brief time with you, I want to bring you back a little bit and just summarize what we did in that first 10 classes so that you can get an idea of the value of going back and listening to them. So we looked at the question, what goes into making you a leader? And we listed a variety of things. Here they are. The baggage you carry goes into making you as a leader. Now, the baggage comes from your family of origin. Sometimes our baggage is something that is good for us as a leader. It helps us figure out good things about how to lead people in an effective way. And that baggage might be a father or mother who was a leader, and they became a model for us. But many, many times, that baggage is negative as well. And so maybe you got a lot of encouragement on the plus side from your parents to become who God called you to be, or maybe you were abused as a child, and that affects you deeply. Or your parents were divorced. Years and years ago, I used to be involved in a process called healing of the memories. Now, the theology behind it was a little shaky, but the philosophy or the thought behind it was that God is not limited by time the way we are. He's outside of time. And so if we could bring somebody back to moments in their life where they were damaged, where they were hurt, where they were carrying scars, if we could pray them back there in a meaningful way and then pray for healing of that there, that hopefully very positive things could happen for the future. And so in times of prayer, you know, we would just slowly go back to some defining moments in their life. And did this often with leaders in the church I was pastoring at the time. And one of the things that was surprising to me was the fact that people could identify them pretty readily. They could identify them, and they could and it was often with pain and tears that they would identify them. And they would talk about the feelings of what it was like. And I remember working with one leader there who was a deacon in the church I was serving. So he had somebody was an influential person in our congregation. And yet we went back with him to the moment when he was told that his parents were divorcing and the aftermath of that. And just the chaos and the brokenness that created in him. And that was affecting his life still negatively, and then certainly his leadership negatively. And so we prayed for healing of that event in his life, the emotions of a young child who was told that his father is moving out. It's that kind of baggage that we carry. Every one of us is unique in the baggage that we carry. And so one of the things we did was look at that and identify it and talk about how we can integrate that into our understanding of who we are. But that's something of what makes us as a leader. Birth order. Your birth order has an impact on how you act as a leader. Firstborns tend to be the ones who are out there in front. They just tend to be those kind of people. Thirdborns tend to be the people who are the actors and actresses and salespeople. They're very good at salespeople. They're very good at people relationships. These are generalizations, of course. Second children tend to be counselors and that sort of thing because they end up being mediators in the process. So we'll talk about that, and we'll talk about how to figure out how that affects you in your life. We talked about life experience. Again, life experience can be negative, or it can be positive. And we're going to talk about how you take a positive view of your life experience. For instance, I had an uncle who went to World War II as a soldier. And prior to going, as a young man, his stated goal was to become a lawyer. That's what he wanted to do. And he had plans for education that would help him achieve that goal. But he ended up in World War II and was so impacted by the amount of death and destruction that he had to see and be part of and cause that when he came back, he took a spiritual turn in his life. And that spiritual turn led him to go into ministry instead. And so instead of going to law school, he ended up in a seminary and ended up serving churches for his adult life. Those kind of life experiences. Now, what kind of life experiences you have? One of the things we looked at in that first part was how to integrate those life experiences into becoming who you are and a more effective leader. And we looked at personality as part of what goes into making you as a leader. All leaders' personalities are not the same. But we looked at things like the Myers-Briggs test. You know, are you an extrovert? Are you an introvert? Are you a sensing person? Or are you that practical, detailed, concrete person? Are you an intuitive or the concrete person? Those kind of things. How does that impact you as you are called to lead in the organization you're part of? And we looked at the DISC, survey and gave you tools, questions online that are free to help you discover where you are on these kind of personality testing things. And I mentioned the Kolbe test, which is not free but is worthwhile taking, another way of looking at your personality to talk about how you most effectively work within any given setting. And so all of those things became part of our investigation of what goes into making you as a leader. And then we had a session on writing a personal mission statement, that you look at who you are and what God has called you to be. And so in those first 10 sessions, there's a Bible study there, which starts with things like Jeremiah 1, where God says to Jeremiah, you know, before you were born, I chose you to be a prophet. Before you were born, I loved you. When you were in your mother's womb, I knew you. The word knew there actually means I loved you. And what does that mean for you? Or what does it mean when Paul says in Philippians, you know, work out your own salvation with fear and with trembling, for it is God who is at work within you, both to will and to work for His good pleasure. What does that mean for you to think about that? And then to think about what has God called you to do within His kingdom? And so I gave you resources to do that, resources to define your personal values, what's your value system, and that will impact where you end up as a leader as far as the organization you're part of. People you admire, a listing of those, and then personal strengths and gifts, that you have spiritual gifting. A spiritual gift is something that you are able to do well in the kingdom. And it's not because you got the right education. It's because this is given to you by the Holy Spirit. And so, know what that spiritual gift is. Know what your personal strengths are. In those first 10 sessions, we also looked at leadership styles. Laissez-faire is the fact that you really don't give a whole lot of form to what's happening. And organizations that have many, many strong leaders in them maybe adopt this as a style, because just let them go, let them find their way and help them organize together and stay on the same page. The last church I served as a pastor was loaded with leaders, and so when people had asked me what my job was, I said, it's keeping everybody on the same page. That's how I defined what I was called to do as a leader in that situation, and it was almost laissez-faire, not quite. Democratic, where you get people together and you talk and process and you engage them in the visioning process and certainly in the process of living out that vision. And that's probably the most popular one. Then there's the autocratic, benevolent style. This is the benevolent dictator. You know, Plato, many, many years ago, the Greek philosopher, was once asked, what's the most effective system of leading a group of people, particularly a country? And he said, the benevolent dictator. And so this is the one where somebody comes along and he has people's good in mind. And he does that for their good. In the church I served in California, I served there 23 years in a church in Southern California. We went through a relocation, and as part of that, we sold the building, the original building that the church put up and sacrificed for. We sold it to a group that was considerably different than we were as far as culture. That Pastor Duke there was the benevolent kind of dictator. And now he did it with the benefit of the people in mind, but in the culture in which he existed, that's how he could best serve. He could best serve by telling people what to do. And so when my daughter was going to get married, she wanted to get married in that building which we had sold, and so I went there to ask if we could rent their building, and I was told by the people in the office that, well, they had to ask Pastor Duke. He made every major decision in the place. And so that's one style. The autocratic, bureaucratic leader style. That's the person who is very directive in saying, this is what you're going to do, and this is how you're going to do it. Now, sometimes that person can be benevolent or not. Many years ago, I had the opportunity to serve in Haiti for a period of time. And I remember going there and interacting with the people from Haiti. And I was working with some very highly educated men in a music camp over a period of time. And In talking with them over lunch and dinner, just talking about the state of situation in Haiti. Haiti is the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere. Billions and billions of dollars of aid have just come into Haiti over the last decades, and yet it doesn't seem to improve the life of the people there. And so we're just talking about what is it going to take to turn Haiti around? And I was surprised that these men said it's going to take a dictator. We need a dictator in this country. Now, as dictators were fought and spoken against, and aid was withheld when a dictator would change situations as far as saying there's not going to be any election next time. Aid would be withheld because we were trying to push people to the democratic style of things, and yet the people there acknowledge that we need a dictator. We want them to be good because they had a lot of bad ones who simply took aid money and funneled it into their own accounts. These are the styles. We talked about the fact that in those first sessions that you can choose a style to fit a situation, to fit a culture. In the Haiti culture, that's what they need, is a strong person. We looked at leadership levels. The fact that when you come into an organization, you have a position, a job description, and that's what you are able to do. You can't go far beyond it. You have this job description. That's what you are to do. Then the idea of permission, that once you have proven that you can do your job description well, other people will begin to be influenced by you and are willing to listen to you. They'll give you permission to lead. And then if you do that well, and things are improving, and there's a production that's happening, there's a success that's happening, the organization is growing, or your department is effective, or whatever, you get into that third level of I can produce something that will be helpful for this organization. People will give you a broader influence within that organization. And then the fourth level is people development. That you take your influence, and instead of just gaining all the accolades, you begin to develop people. And you begin to invest in them. You want them to grow in their capacity. You want them to grow in their abilities. You want them to grow in their own leadership, even to the point where some maybe will go elsewhere. But you are investing in people, and they know that you care about them, and they know you want the best for them. That's another level of leadership that expands your influence even further, and usually even beyond the organization or church that you're a part of. And then finally is personhood, where people will follow you just because you have spent a lot of years being an effective leader. And of course, I'll give the example of Billy Graham, somebody who recently has died from these tapings of these videos. Somebody's been around a long time, and therefore people are willing to listen, and they will listen to him. So we looked at all of that, and then we concluded with a couple of sessions looking at the dark side of leadership. In other words, you have a dark side to you. Because of your life experience, because of your family of origin, because of a variety of choices you have made in addition to those things that you didn't choose, you have potential for failure in you. And it's a dark side. Alexander Solzhenitsyn, the great Russian writer, said that he realized as he was in a prison, the gulag in Russia, that the line between good and evil doesn't pass between classes of people, nor groups of people, nor even nations. It passes through the human heart. And you have the capacity for great evil. And so we discussed that and where it comes from. And then in the next session, the last session before a wrap-up, we talked about how in the world you overcome that dark side. How do you not let it control you? And I share my own experience of my own failure and what it costs me as an individual, as a leader, to fail spectacularly. But the point is, if you are a leader, you have a target on you. It's a well-known battle tactic throughout the many, many years of warfare. It came especially to awareness during the Civil War here in the United States. And that is that when people are shooting, they aren't just shooting indiscriminately trying to kill the other soldiers, but they're shooting at the leaders, the officers, because they know if they can kill an officer, it's going to have a huge impact on the outcome of the battle. If you are a leader, the enemy has a target on you. And You've got to be aware of that and know where your potential weaknesses are so that you can address them positively and with the strength of the Holy Spirit. And so all of these things are part of what we talked about in those first 10 sessions. Again, I want to encourage you to go back and work through those. There are 20 to 30 minute sessions. There are 10 of them that simply introduce myself and introduce these topics we've been talking about here in a way that will prepare you to be a leader who meets the culture. Now, my plan in these next sessions, the next 35, is that we're going to address some things about leader again, that first image that we looked at where that leader interacts with the culture. We're going to do some things about leadership, then we're going to move to culture, then we're going to move to vision, then we're going to move to plans and strategies and prayer that are necessary for a successful leadership experience. So I invite you along for the ride. It's going to be fun. I'm passionate about the subject of leadership, and hope by the end of these sessions together, you will be able to find yourself more effective in the place where God has called you for His glory and for the building of His kingdom. So come along.